And because we are not going to be around for the next 2 weeks, we've got to a point in Matthew where verse 21, Jesus goes up to the temple. That's where he's going up to. And rather than start a sort of in that and then having a 2 week break, I thought we would take a look at the temple. Because we read a lot about it, we hear a lot about it, and we've probably got some sort of image or understanding in our minds, but we don't fully understand. I don't think we fully capture how important the temple is. It's absolutely central to Jerusalem and Jewish worship. And so I will only bring a few scriptures today, but it was more of a history lesson. But it's an important history lesson because I hope you'll understand how important it is. Because Jesus cleansing the temple is actually the trigger for them deciding to, you know, go all out and arrest him at that point. It's not because he said blasphemous things, although they tried to kill him for that. It's not because he was attracting the crowd. It's because of what he said about the temple. And this is important to understand. It's one of the few things, Jesus cleansing the temple, it's one of the few things that is in every one of the Gospels, which is why it's important. And throughout the narrative, as Jesus goes up to cleanse the temple and to the time he's taken to Golgotha, the temple is center stage. Now, we need to understand there is no pagan temples in Jerusalem at all. Only the temple of the Jews, which was, as we'll come on to it, it's the capital, it's the holy city, and no other temples were permitted. They were utterly torn down. So if you went to Jerusalem, there was no chance of you finding a thing. Even the Romans acquiesced and agreed for no statues or no busts of their emperors in Jerusalem. It was a holy city. And there was, I think it was Tiberius, who decided that he would place a bust of some emperors there, and there was an absolute riot, and they were all taken down and smashed. So it is this place. Temples and statues would have caused any unrest. And so Jerusalem had this unique position, or the Jews had this unique position in the Roman Empire. And Jerusalem and the temple in Jerusalem was the focus for the whole of the Jews. Doesn't matter, you couldn't go somewhere else, you couldn't come to England and build a temple here. We'll talk about synagogues in a minute. But you can't build another temple. That was the place where worship and sacrifice to God was made. And nowhere else was it permitted. And this is what makes the Jewish people so different from the rest of the world. Because in those days, if you were a Roman emperor and you decided that you were a deity, you would have temples all over the place. Our Roman castle here in Colchester is built on the Temple of Claudius, which was a temple that was set up for him, one of many, but not so for the Jews. One temple, one God, and that's how God ordained it. And that's how the Jews did it. Now, there are synagogues all over the Roman world, but there is only one temple. And synagogues were gathering places for the Jews. So in, I don't say Capernaum, you can go and see the first century remains of the synagogue there. But people would come together for prayers, there would be hymns, and there would be instruction, a bit like what we've done today. So you could say a synagogue is similar to a church in that sense. But there was only one place you could actually offer a sacrifice to God. You can go and sing about him, you go and pray to him, you go and talk about him, but the only place you can offer a sacrifice is the temple, as laid out by the Mosaic law. And it's a very, very special, unique place. Now today, if we've got the next slide, please. I know it's not very clear. I took this from Dominus Fevit, I think it is, yes. You can see that little gold dome. You probably can't on the live stream. You see that gold dome. This is the temple site today. Now, sadly, that is a mosque that you're looking at there. That gold dome you can see, because it is also a sacred site. I think it's the third most sacred site for the Muslims in the world. we could go into the whole reason why that is, but let's just accept at this point that that is, well, they're not that, not accepted, that is the Temple Mount. And what you see there, that dome, is probably about, the temple would have been about roughly almost three times higher than that. So when you go to Jerusalem, you can see from anywhere, and you can see this gold dome glinting in the sun. But imagine it being at least three times higher than that. That's how big the temple was. Now, the Jews still call it the Temple Mount. That area there is still called the Temple Mount. It can't be built anywhere else because that's where God instructed that the temple will be built. Now, I know there's a lot of discussion around the third temple. We'll come on to the first and second temple. I know there's a lot of discussions about building it on the other side of the Kidron Valley and having a bridge between the two. But this is the site underneath there where God asked Abraham to sacrifice his son Isaac. And that's why that is such a special place. Now, clearly, the Muslims say that it wasn't Isaac, it was Ishmael. And this is why it's a special place for them. Now, sadly, you can't go in there anymore. There was an Australian, I think about 8 years ago, who went in there and tried to start a fire. So they've just banned all non-Muslim people from going in. And certainly as ladies, you wouldn't be allowed in there. There's no chance of you getting in there. But as Western men, unless you can prove you're a Muslim, and I assume that would be something along the lines of reciting some surahs and being able to discuss with the imams in the doorway, that then you'd be allowed in. What you see there was built around about 700 AD. It's a beautiful place. It is lovely, but you're not allowed in. So you can't see the rock where Abraham was going to sacrifice Isaac. It's the highest point of the city of Jerusalem, and that is actually Mount Moriah, what you're looking at there. I know it's very flat. We'll talk about why that is in a minute, but that's Mount Moriah. And so the Jewish people are very aware that this site is really important to them. This is the site. And when they went into the promised land, they didn't actually conquer Jerusalem. It's quite interesting. Jerusalem remained a Canaanite city, a pagan city, right up until King David took the city about 3,000 years ago, 1000 BC. And once he'd taken the city, it was David, under the instruction of the Lord, that brought the Ark of the Covenant to this site and said, this is where God is now worshipped, and only this site. And despite all the world leaders, for all the generations arguing about it, it's the capital of Israel for 3,000 years. It always has been, and it always will be. It's not Palestine. Palestine never existed up until this point. There were Philistines, but Palestine didn't exist. Palestine is a Roman invention hundreds of years after Jesus' death. This is the capital of Israel. Always has been, and the Bible tells us always will be. So David said that that's where they would, the temple would be built, and he really wanted to do it, but it was his son Solomon that got to build the temple. Now, this temple that was built, they had a collection, people donated things. It was magnificent. For the ancient world, it's a shame it's not around today, but for the ancient world, it was beyond imagination. It was the most glorious building anywhere in the world. It had gold and jewels and all kinds of things. And this was called the First Temple. And it stood on that site until 586 BC, when the Babylons came and they razed the place to the ground and took the Jews into captivity. Now, the Jews were taken by slaves to Babylon, and they were only there for a few decades before they were conquered themselves by the Persians. And Cyrus, the great king of Persia, he instructed all of the Babylonian slaves, Jews included, who had been captured, to be set free. And to show you how important the Temple Mount was, their focus was, we need to get back to Jerusalem and offer sacrifices because that's the only place we can do it. And so they went straight back to Jerusalem and they started to rebuild the temple. Now, it took some while, it took a time, there was a lot of fussing and problems going on, but they did rebuild the temple. And that is called the second temple. But the problem was, because they'd been slaves, they had no money. But from day one, they got back, they were able to resume sacrifices on that spot inside what is now the Dome of the Rock. Okay, it is called, we'll call it the Temple Mount, right? That's what it's where it was. And although they started to do this, they built the second temple around them. Now, it wasn't very impressive, but it was able to. They were able to offer sacrifices to God. Now, this was built around 510 to 520 BC. So when Jesus goes up to the temple, so when he was 8 years old, you remember they went to Jerusalem to register him. Every time you read about the temple, this is the temple that you're reading about, this second century temple. Can we have the next one, please? So ignore the writing around it. I nicked it off of a Bible package. But it's not very impressive. The temple itself at the time wasn't, not this one. This is what Herod eventually does. Remember Herod, who was around when Jesus was born? He tried to kill all the kids and all the rest of it. He becomes king of the Jews, which is quite ironic because he wasn't a Jew, in 37 BC. And he decides, this is Herod, he decides that he's going to expand the Temple Mount. And what you've got, so the footprint of the Temple Mount today is the footprint of where Herod built or expanded the Temple Mount. The second temple would have just been a small, that small building in the middle on the rock, and everything would have sort of led up to it. It would have been a right sort of rocky hill up to it. So Herod decides that he's going to expand this Temple Mount. Is it because he wants to offer sacrifices? No. It's nothing to do with that. He's the Trump of his day. He wants to be the biggest, the best, and have the greatest, and everybody to come and say, oh, you're so magnificent, Herod, look at what you've done. And so what he does is he decides that he's going to build the most impressive building he could ever build anywhere in the world. And knowing how much the Jews love this, we can get them to pay for it. And I'm going to build this enormous temple that's going to be a wonder of the world. Now, he did build many palaces and other buildings, but what he does is he doesn't change the footprint of the temple. So he doesn't change the small building, the size of it. He changes it upwards, but he doesn't change the size of the small building. But he does expand that mount. And what he does is he builds this enormous brick wall around it and then just fills it in and slabs it over. And that's why you end up with this enormous structure that you can see, well, the footprint of it today in Jerusalem, but that's what it would have looked like roughly at the time of Jesus. Now, that corner in the bottom right here is traditionally thought to be the place where the devil took Jesus up to when he tempted him and say, throw yourself off, because that's the highest point, because it looks right down into the Kidron Valley across the Mount of Olives. It's the highest point with the biggest drop in the area. So the temple, again, really, really important. Now, people in error call it Herod's Temple. And don't put the next slide up yet, but the next slide when we have it, you'll see it's called Herod's Temple. But that's not true. It was never Herod's Temple. It is God's Temple. And Herod only expanded the area that the temple was in. And through all of these works and all the years it took, the Jews carried on worshipping and sacrificing according to the Mosaic law. That wasn't going to stop. I mean, today, you clear the site, don't you? Everybody has to stay out. Not true. And one of the reasons for this was because it took 80 years for this beautification or this expansion of the Temple Mount to be carried out. To give you a size of that, over 10,000 workers were employed to do this work that had taken place here. And actually, Herod died before it was completed. So he started it, and he built these plans, and it was well along the way, but he died before it came. Now, the stones of the foundation of the Temple Mount, so people talk about the pyramids and how great they are, and Stonehenge and how the stones get there. Josephus, so this chap here, this is one of his works, is the Jewish War. He talks about how the temple becomes destroyed. We're going to come to that. But Josephus was a first century historian, and he wrote all about the Jewish war. It's called the Jewish war. And what he there in here, he describes some of the temple-related stones. He says they were 45 cubits long, 5 high and 6 broad, which roughly translates to 70 foot long and up to 12 feet in other dimensions. Now remember, if you've ever been to Israel, it's just dry and dusty. Those rocks had to be carved and transported up to 1,000 men at a time to the Temple Mount and put in place. It is as wonderful, if not more wonderful, than the pyramids. Because it's beautiful white stone, and it is a fantastic feat of engineering to do this. Modern archaeologists and historians describe the Temple Mount and note that the ashlar blocks, that's the ones near the bottom, estimate roughly some at 100 tons and one of them at almost 600 tons. Even transporting a 600 ton rock today would be a mammoth undertaking. Herod, with the Jews, did this. And what's important is the Jews, because of the way things were, because it says temple to God, only the Jews could touch those stones. Because you can't have Gentiles touching all those things. So it's this unbelievable thing. They were quarried elsewhere and they were brought to the Temple Mount. The walls were put in place and all of the temple was filled in. All of that ground was filled in to the level of the existing temple that was there. Now, the most famous of these retaining walls that you can still see today, can we have the next slide, please, and you'll all know this place, is the Western Wall. Now, that's only a fraction of the Western Wall. The Western Wall on the left here runs so much further. Now, you can go in there. Ladies, sadly, you can't go in there. As men, we've gone there. I've been in there. And it's full of books and people and rabbis talking, discussing the Torah. But it goes even further than what you can see in there. And the reason why it's so important is because, as I said to you, the Muslims now have the Temple Mount. And so this is the closest place you can get to what was the Second Temple as a Jew. Because Jews, they are allowed on the Temple Mount, but they're not allowed to do any praying, take any artifacts or anything like that. You're allowed to walk up there, but nothing else. And only when the Muslims allow it. So when tensions rise, you can't go up there. The brown staircase here, that's the only entrance that you and I are allowed to walk up. And only when the Muslims decide that you can do that. So when there's any flashpoints, you can imagine what happens. Sometimes people got there, they're throwing stones down and all kinds of stuff. It's a real flashpoint, but it is the place where Jews go and Gentiles go to pray, and that's the closest you can get to the site of the temple. The whole site, the whole complex is completed around 62 AD, like I say, after Herod's died, and within 8 years, remember Jesus made a prophecy? He said, every stone will be taken down. Within 8 years, it's destroyed. Oh, what an absolute waste. This enormous structure. All of this, all of everything is just utterly desolate. The Jews said that God was truly present with them at the temple. Now, they didn't cage God in the temple. That's not what it was about. But they knew that the temple was a symbol of Israel, of God watching over them. And so the temple gives them a sense of comfort and assurance that God is with them and God will protect them. It becomes very important later on why the destruction and some of why it happened. And this is why the idea that the temple being destroyed and Jesus saying, you see that temple, that's going to be torn down and not one brick will lay upon the other. That is absolutely the most outrageous thing you could say to the Jews at the time. You just imagine you've got this enormous temple on this mount, and Jesus is saying, that's all coming down, and that's not going to stand on it. And that's the whole of the centre of the worship of Israel. The Jewish nation are united at the temple. There are certain feasts that the Jews have to attend each year. These are called the pilgrim festivals, and you had to travel a distance to get there. When you got there, you had to pay your temple tax of half a shekel. Do you remember when we had that passage about Jesus being asked about whether he paid the tax, and he says to Peter, go and catch a fish, and when he catches the fish, there's a coin in its mouth. That's the temple tax that you would have to pay when you got there. This complex that Herod built is the largest complex anywhere in the world. And because it's the temple, the only temple of all the Jews, all of the wealth of Judaism is centered here in Jerusalem. It was unrivaled by any pagan temple. It was extremely wealthy. And in fact, that Josephus records that it had so much money coming in and so much money in the treasury, they stopped counting it. It just took too long. That's how much wealth was here. It was the religious centre of Judaism, and it was the economic centre of the region at that time. And just to be clear, the Temple Mount itself occupied at that time, not today, but at that time, a quarter of the city. 25% of the city was the Temple Mount, and everybody else lived around it. The whole of the surrounding area was all dedicated to serving the temple, working at the temple, or industries around the temple. There's a constant stream of people, and there are a lot of customers, just like there are today. There's lots of souvenir shops all over the place. But in those days, there were all kinds of items for sale, things that you could do to trade, to use on the Temple Mount. But again, imagine travelling that great distance to get there. And when you got there, you found that, I don't know, you needed your toothbrush. There were people selling things like that. There were all these businesses that sprung up for all these pilgrims that were coming from all over the place. Loads of luxury goods, because there were some very, very wealthy people there. And there were the Jewish elders lived there, the high priest and his family, the chief priest in their family. They wanted the best and to look the best and to be the best and to show that they were the best. But there were also some luxury items that were required in the temple. It's the Lord's house, it's the Lord's temple. We're not going to use anything inferior. It is this enormous place. There's also a great need for animals. Because why would you come to Jerusalem? You would come to sacrifice your animals according to the Mosaic law. It's very difficult when you're coming, say, I don't know, 300-400 miles away, walking there for one of the festivals, to bring 4 or 5 cows with you. You would buy them when you got there. That's what you would do. And so you wouldn't bring those animals with you, you would buy them there. Remember, this is all starting to make sense about Jesus turning over the tables and the rest of it. It's because it's been turned into a commercial venture. We'll talk more about what happened at that point. And for many of the feasts, the Jewish men were expected to be there. The only men who weren't to be there were those who couldn't actually ascend the temple steps to get up into the temple. So the elderly, the frail, the handicapped. If you couldn't get up there on your own power, you didn't bother going. Now, Jewish women were not required to go to these ceremonies, but this, it's not like today where you think, oh, where should we go on holiday? This was the Jewish holiday. So you would bring the whole family with you. We're going up to Jerusalem because it's the festival of weeks or whatever it might be. And that's what you would do. That was your holiday. And so there was something called the second tithe. Now here, so you had your first tithe, okay? And the second tithe was you were expected to spend a certain amount on your, let's call it a holiday, but on your trip to Jerusalem, you were expected to purchase certain items for the feast. And it was called the second tithe. And you had to purchase these items in Jerusalem. You couldn't bring them with you, because that wasn't allowed. You had to, but this is what was expected, and this is part of the man-made laws. So when Jesus says you've turned it into a den of thieves, this is what he's referring to. This whole business that sprung up around him. And I can't help but just draw those parallels to the modern church and how some people behave. You know, my house, Jesus said, should be called a house of prayer, not a money-making scam so that you can scoot around the world in your jet and all the rest of it. Roman writers, Roman historians, talk about the wealth of the temple. There was so much wealth at the temple, as I said, during the Maccabees period. So if you ever read the Apocrypha, so at the end of Malachi, and then we have the Gospels, there was this period about 300 years where there was no scripture as such written. But we have the Apocrypha, and some of the apocryphal books were written in that period, particularly the ones called Maccabees. And it was about 200 BC that they stopped counting the treasury because there was just so much money in it. So 200 years before Jesus even shows up on the scene, it is absolutely opulent and wealthy. So the temple area isn't just a single building, as you can see there. There's many, on the previous, go up again, please, now. On the previous picture, you can see there are many buildings. There's this big one on the south wall here. So the western wall is what you would see on the left, where you've got that sort of bridge up to it. That was where the wealthy people lived, because they didn't want to walk up to the temple. They could cross over a bridge and get into the Temple Mount. There's lots of courtyards, there's lots of storage rooms, there's whole kind of stuff going on, meeting rooms, treasury. It's the highest point in the city, and that's why when you read in the Gospels, they say they're going up to Jerusalem. It's because they had to walk uphill to get there. And as you enter the temple, you would go up steps to go to the first area, and then more steps to go to the next area, and more steps to go to the next area. And as you progressed through the space, you went up in elevation, obviously, because you're walking up steps. Now, most people entered through the south side. That's called, bit you see here, with the building on the end of it. And that has, most people went in there, but that's where you would enter in. And here is what we call the monumental staircase. You can see the remains of it today, but that's the monumental staircase. There were 30 steps parallel to each other, and you would walk up them to an opening called the double gate, where you would go effectively into the mountain that Herod had flattened out. Most people went in that way. You would go into the mount, and there were vaulted ceilings with lamps so you could see your way. And these ceilings were decorated, highly decorated. And as you walked into there, you would see these beautiful designs and patterns of stones and things all lit up by the lamps as you were going through. And there would have been a hubbub of noise. It isn't like, up to the temple. You'd have gone in and you would have been amazed. You'd have been talking. It's a very social thing. Ladies, children, and men all through these gates. And at the top of the Temple Mount is what we call the Court of Gentiles. That's that big sort of square area you see there. Up until this wall here, this is the Court of Gentiles. And so as a Gentile, you could go up with all the Jews to the Temple Mount. However, you were not allowed to go through into that other wall that I've just pointed out to you. The Gentile court is not a restricted space. It would have been paved with beautiful stones because, again, the Jews are trying to show to the world through how Herod's plans that we serve the one God and he is the best. It would have been different colours, different patterns, all the columns would have been, all of it would have just been amazing to people who were used to living in mud huts and dust on the ground. It would have been absolutely amazing to them. Each of those columns is 40 foot high and it's made of the whitest marble they could find. Again, all quarried somewhere else, all brought to the Temple Mount. It's a massive undertaking. And I don't think we fully grasp sometimes when we read about the temple. We go, oh, yeah, it's the temple. No, it's the temple. The greatest building that had ever been built in the world. The colonnades were along every length. They were, and those coverings that you see were about 50 foot wide. And they were covered with, they're about 50 foot wide, and they're covered with cedar wood that was elaborately carved. So all around the sides, apart from this right side that you can see here, there were these columns and these rooms and spaces that you could go into. And this is where Jesus would spend his time teaching. So when it says Jesus was at the temple, that's where he would have been. Not in the Holy of Holies or the little bit in the middle. He would have been in the court of the Gentiles and he would have been teaching there. It would have been a really noisy place. He'd have been sheltered from the sun and the rain, but in those areas would have been markets for sacrificial animals. It's where the money changers were. I'll talk about money changers when we get to that passage in 3 weeks' time. And that's where they would set up their money to change the money, and I'll explain why they changed their money there. And this was the area that people went, this was the focus of the whole of the Jewish religion. And it's where Jesus taught. And there was this low wall, it's about 5 foot high, about the size of a garden fence that you see today, that I pointed out to you. And it's called the Wall of Separation. And it separates the Jews from the Gentiles, because only the Jews were allowed to enter into that area through the Wall of Separation. It's really interesting. Paul writes about this in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 14. For he himself is our peace, who has made us both one and has broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility, the wall of separation, by abolishing the law of commandments expressed in ordinances, that he might create in himself one new man in the place of two, so making peace, and might reconcile us both to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility. Paul refers to this wall of separation in the Gospel of Ephesians. There is nothing now to separate Jews and Gentiles. Hallelujah, praise God. Because it's all been removed. But Flavius Josephus, now, as I say, he was a priest at the temple, and he wrote about these details. Now, along this wall of separation, there were small gaps every so often, but there was a sign on all the gaps, and it said, if you were a Gentile and you walked through that gap, you would be killed on sight. You would be killed on sight. Why? Because they were not clean and they were Gentile. This is, again, a fascinating thing, that it's the only exemption in the whole of the Roman Empire where the death penalty could be given by a group of people without consulting the Romans. If you went through that wall of separation as a Gentile, they were allowed to kill you. Now, there's no records of that actually happening. I wonder why, because you probably don't want to go through there and be killed. But the Jews would enter into this temple area, and they would then go into this sort of open courtyard. Now, if we can have the two pictures down, I think is the last picture. This is, I know it's called Herod's Temple on the slide, but this is the second temple. So once you get into that past that wall of separation, this is what you would have been faced with somewhere in this sort of time. Now, the main entrance is on the right here, and it's called the Beautiful Gate. And the area in front of that is called the Women's Courtyard, because as a woman, a Jewish woman, with your children, this was as far as you were allowed to go. So you could go up on Temple Mount, you could go through the Wall of Separation, you could climb up into the Women's Court, but that's it, no further, as a woman. So that's why it's called the Women's Court. It was called the Beautiful Gate. And the court of women was paved with pure marble, and it was decorated with stones and decorations made out of silver. Now, that beautiful gate was a huge door, and it's mentioned in the book of Acts, Acts 3, verse 1. Now, Peter and John were going up to the temple at the hour of the prayer, the ninth hour, and a man lame from birth was being carried, who they laid daily at the gate of the temple that is called the Beautiful Gate, to ask alms of those entering the temple. So again, you know, I'm just trying to explain to you what the temple is, how important it is, and how it's woven through all of our scripture. And so it isn't important. So that beautiful gate was massive. It was a huge gold door. And the court of the women was this big open square space. And again, there was columns all the way around it, so you could find shelter under all those columns. But you'll notice on top of it, there's a balcony as well. So as ladies, you could go up and you could look at what was going on. Men could go up and they could look at what was going on in the area. They could see what was taking place there. In there, in that court of women, there were water ceremonies and fire ceremonies. They had massive torches and massive lamps that they would light. They were full of oil. Four massive round bowls that they would set on fire at certain points for the Festival of Lights. And it was during these festivities, where, especially during the Feast of Tabernacles or the Feast of Booths, which was up there, is where Jesus stood up and said, I am the light of the world. Got these four enormous bowls burning away, lighting up the sky. And Jesus says, I am the light of the world. It's also where he said, whoever is thirsty, let him come and drink. At the water festival. It was a noisy place. People prayed out to God. The ladies weren't allowed into the next part, so they would try and shout their prayers. It was absolutely full of din. There would have been animals bleating, people talking. It's a hard surface. Your shoes would have been rattling along. There was all of this going on. But what's interesting is around that area were boxes where you could place your offerings. So if you wanted to have an offering for a, I don't know, let's just say more gold for the temple, you could put your coins in these big sort of horns that would rattle all the way down to a small little box. And that's what you, I've given money for the gold in the temple. If you wanted to give gold for, give money for, I don't know, something like the mercy seat or a box for animals or whatever, there would be different boxes all around this courtyard where you could do it. And it's here when Jesus talks about the woman, do you remember the widow's mite? It's here. Have you ever wondered why? You know, I always had this sort of image of this dark place and sitting at the back of a church and watching. No, she puts her money in and it rattles its way down his horn and then into this box that's at the bottom. And Jesus points her out. Maybe he was standing next to it or nearby it because of the noise, but that's where it would have happened. It's a noisy, busy place. Across from the beautiful door is a set of steps that men would have to ascend to bring their sacrifice. So, here, the steps are here. And they would go up these steps. There were 15 of these steps, and there are 15 Psalms of Ascent. You would repeat one of those Psalms for every step as you went up the steps. That's why they're called Psalms of Ascent. If you look them up in your Bible, you'll find those 15 of them. And at the top of that was a huge bronze gate with two doors called the Gate of Nicanor. These bronze doors were so thick and heavy that it would take 20 men to either open one of them or close one of them. That's how big these doors were. The Gate of Nicanor leads into the court of Israel. And here there's an area that you would hand your animal to the priest to be sacrificed. And again, there's another low wall that only the priest could enter into, the court of priests. And it's around there, around that court, is where the Sanhedrin would meet. So when they meet to discuss killing Jesus, it's in the most holiest place that only the priest could go. Shocking. The altar that you see, which is on the left here, this here. Yeah, this is the priest's courtyard where the animals would be slaughtered in front of you. This is the altar. This altar is 25 foot high, so it's about as high as a two-story house, and it's 50 foot square. And there's a huge laver by the side of it full of water. Because when you're killing animals and dragging their guts upstairs and you're burning things, there needs to be a lot of water. And so that is where the sacrifice would take place. And behind all of this is the building that is called the sanctuary. That is actually the real temple. That is the place where it is. Now, the temple is used to refer to the entire complex, but it's really this tiny little building that is the temple. There were 12 steps up to the entrance, and at the top of where the porch, where you went in, were four massive white marble columns, 60 foot high. Enormous things. Now, they might have been in sections, we don't know, but there would still be enormous columns. And in between those columns, around the entrance to the way into that temple, was two columns that were covered in gold. Bunches of grapes that were 6 foot high is recorded. And the vines. And as you gave money, they would carry on covering those columns with vines and these grape branches. In fact, the whole of the building there is wrapped in gold. It's recorded that the gold was the thickness of a coin, gold sheets put on the whole of the outside of it. It was absolutely amazing. And all the people, when they donated their money, this is where it would go to pay for these things. Inside the Holy of Holies, you'd have gone in, there'd have been a massive menorah on the left. Now, in the original first temple, there'd have been, I think, six of them or something like that, or seven of them. But this one only had one. There'd have been a table of showbread made of gold. The menorah was made of gold. And there would have been an altar of incense also made entirely of gold. And then there was a curtain that separated the holy place from the most holy place, or the Holy of Holies. This is the veil that gets torn in two. And the high priest once a year would go in there to offer the sacrifice for atonement. That's where Zechariah went in. Remember, he met the angel. That's the place it would have happened. And in that place, the Holy of Holies, should have been the Ark of the Covenant. But it wasn't there. You see, that was taken by the Babylonians in 586 when they started to destroy the temple. We don't know where it is. People don't know at all where the Ark of the Covenant is or whether it still exists anymore. The beautification of the temple was started by Herod, and it lasted 80 years. And it finished just before the Jewish war broke out that Josephus writes about. And the Romans came, not because they wanted to take the temple. I don't think they did want to take the temple. But the Jews had revolted against the Romans. They had got a little bit too big for themselves. Thought, we don't need this Roman rule. We're going to rule. Because that's what they believed Jesus was going to do. That's why they rejected him as a Messiah. So at some point, someone said, why don't we take charge of this? Let us take. And they revolted against the Romans. And the Romans came and they besieged the city and surrounded it and starved the people. And there's some pretty grim tales in here about eating babies and things like that, because there was nothing. They had no food. That's what they had to do. They didn't have to do, but that's what they did. Jerusalem was besieged for about 3 years, and it was only besieged because, if you remember, I showed that picture of Temple Mount with these enormous sides. It was surrounded by valleys. It was an absolute impenetrable fortress. So all you could do was just not allow anybody in, not allow anybody out. It took 3 years to do it. And eventually the Romans did break through into the city. And all the people who managed to survive until that point decided that they would run to the Temple Mount and into the temple itself, because they believed that God would never allow this structure to be destroyed. So they all gathered in there, and trying to gather in the building, and all the rules have gone out the window by then. Everybody's trying to get into this temple in the middle, all explained by Josephus. And they barricaded themselves inside this Temple Mount, inside the temple. They're all barricaded up in there. Now, nobody knows exactly why, but a fire started, sadly, and it caught fire, the veil inside the Holy of Holies, and the whole place burnt to the ground. Remember, it was all covered in, it was cedar wood, and it all burnt to the ground. It burnt everything, and all that were left were the stones. There was gold utensils, there was the gold decoration, there was all the money that couldn't be counted, there was all that. What happened to all that gold? Well, this is the interesting part. It ran into the cracks in all the bricks. It went into all the cracks in all the bricks all over the place. And so that when the cracks of the stones were all filled with this gold, what would happen is, when the whole war was over and everybody cleared off, people would go to the site and they would pull the stones down to get the gold in the cracks. Jesus said, didn't he? Not one stone will be left upon another stone. You can go to Greece, you can look at temples and the Acropolis and all kinds of things. But the reason there's nothing left on there, one, because they pushed a whole load, the Romans pushed a whole load into the valley, but also people went up to get the gold out between the stones. And in order to do that, you have to pull them apart and separate the stones. Jesus said, didn't he? Jesus left the temple, this is Matthew 24, verse 1. Jesus left the temple and was going away when his disciples came to point to him the buildings of the temple. And he answered them, "You see all these, do you not? Truly I say to you, there will not be left one stone upon another that will not be thrown down." All of that is to show you how important the temple was, but how in control and what God knew was going to happen into the future. I don't think the Romans wanted to destroy it. I think they probably wanted to worship their own gods there. It's recorded that gold, so much gold was being recovered from the area, that the value of gold dropped significantly. And the only bits you could find after people had taken all the big lumps were, like I say, these little tiny bits in between the cracks, and that's why people ripped all the stones down. Grab the worship team, please. And so I hope I know it's only been a brief whistle. We could have spent ages on this, why the Muslims have it today and other bits and pieces. But I hope that gives you some idea of the temple. So when we read about the temple in the Bible, particularly in the time of Jesus, we go through the gospel, it's this enormous structure that we're talking about. And then when I get back from holiday, we'll start talking about Jesus cleansing the temple and why it was so contentious.